And just, I'm thinking about the word delusional, right? Like, I think sometimes it has this negative connotation, but like, if you talk to any professional athlete, how many of them would tell you that someone in their life at some point said, what are you kidding me? You'll never be a golfer, or you'll never be a football player. You'll never be a baseball player in the MLB. What are you kidding yourself? That's crazy to think about. That's delusional. And in order to get to where you want to go, you have to think big, I think, and you have to be delusional. And I don't think it's necessarily a negative word, you know?
Welcome to Golf Yourself Healthy, the podcast which invites guests from all corners of the golf, health, and well-being industry to share inspiring stories and practical insights on how we can be at our best mentally, physically, and socially, both on and off the golf course. I'm Chris Lynch, your host and the founder of GYH, where it is our mission to help you live happier, healthier, and more fulfilled lives through the power of golf. If that sounds like a movement and a community that you would like to be a part of, then head to golfyourselfhealthy.com and subscribe now. Now, before I introduce today's guest, let me ask you a question. Has anyone ever told you you were delusional? Like, for example, if you said you wanted to get from a handicap in the 20s down to single figures, or that you could quit drinking and live a happier, healthier, and more fulfilled life. Well, I've been told that by myself. A little over 6 years ago, I quit drinking for good. However, before I finally arrived there, it wasn't without me convincing myself that the prospect of achieving lasting sobriety was a pipe dream, a goal which would always be desirable to me, but which would evade me and forever remain out of reach. You see, in golf, much like in life, we need to dream. We need to have the faith, the hope, and the never-ending belief in ourselves that our dreams will come true and that we can achieve our goals if we work hard for them. Today's guest, Corey Davis, is a man who most certainly has that conviction and is relentlessly pursuing his mission of transforming society's perception of sobriety through the lens of golf. Since launching Sober Golf at the beginning of this year, he's amassed a large following and a devoted community who are all helping each other on the journey towards sobriety, as well as sharing in their collective love and passion for the game of golf. Corey and I go back a little bit of time now, as you'll hear, and I had the honour of being one of his first ever guests on his podcast, Against the Grain, which you'll find a link for in the show notes. I also recently collaborated with Corey and Soba through the publication of a journal article which I wrote to celebrate my 6 year sober anniversary last week. You can check that out at golfyourselfhealthy.com/journal and read it there for free. Whether you're sober, sober curious, or just simply love golf, there's something in this conversation for all of you. So let's tee off and jump into the conversation. All right. Corey Davis, welcome to GYH. Welcome to the Golf Yourself Healthy podcast, my friend. It's great to see you there, to have you here. The shoe is on the other foot today. Some people listening to this may know and have actually listened to the episode of the Against the Grain podcast, which is Corey's podcast. Do check it out if you don't follow it or listen to it already, folks. Was it episode 2, I think, Corey?
Episode 2.
Yeah, one of the early ones. How many have you got under your belt now? What episode are you on?
We released our 14th episode this week. It was with Grayson Murray's caddy, Jay Green. So that was a really heavy episode. But we've done about 40 now. So we have about 40 backlogged. So trying to get one a week for the year.
Nice. Well, we'll get to talking about Against the Grain and Sober more broadly. Corey, you and I share a number of things in common. We share that we are dads, relatively young dads, I'd like to say, of young daughters. We love golf and we're both sober. And I'm going to start on the parenting point
first, because again, you've been incredibly kind to me and great listener. And every time we speak about my my journey with losing my son, so now that my first time of having a living child, I have learned, Corey, they make you be way better at time management. Or like it kind of, you know, I'm a bit of a procrastinator by trade. I've generally found now since Naris came along that between doing GYH, doing my day job and everything else that I've got going on, like you can't really afford to waste a minute. So I don't know if you find that.
I still find time to waste a minute. It's amazing. But, you know, it only hurts me in the long run, unfortunately. But, you know, I you're right. I mean, there's only so much time in the day. My wife, I feel like we're always saying that. And, you know, I do find myself working at odd hours sometimes. You know, I'll be in my office at 11 o'clock, 11:30 at night because I was procrastinating, right? But, yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, it's a selfless job and thankless at times, but it is so precious and special, and it you know, gives me so much. Yeah. It's quite special.
Absolutely. So, we're going to talk a major on sobriety and golf in this conversation. How about, I mean, maybe first of all, do you want to introduce yourself to the listener in whatever way you like to do to tell your story, but ultimately bringing us to a point where it introduces your sobriety?
Yeah, sure. I'll try my best. I have a tough time kind of talking about myself sometimes, but recently 15 years sober. May 11th was 15 years for me. I got sober at 22 years old. And the reason I got sober at 22 years old was because if I didn't, I probably wouldn't be having this conversation right now. You know, things were pretty dark. You know, it's interesting. You know, obviously I have my own podcasts or most of them are sober or, you know, experiencing walking towards this. And a lot of the times the question I'll ask them is like, what was it like May 10th? You know, 2010, the day before. You know, I don't think I knew that it was the day that I would stop, but I know that I remember doing a lot of pointing fingers at people, telling them they didn't do this for me or they weren't there for me, and, you know, blaming my circumstances and blaming life in general for the way my life was. And it's just so lame and boring to do that. And I think just things happened when I started to, and I don't think I did this consciously. It kind of just happened where, I was in enough pain where when someone asked me if I wanted help, I accepted the invitation, to a rehab, and, you know, I have not drank or used drugs since that day. So that was a special day celebrating a couple of weeks ago. It happened to be Mother's Day, which is special too for the obvious reasons. And yeah, I now have a deep love and passion for golf. I started playing golf in 2020. It's been something that's been a real compliment in my life to my sobriety journey. It's something that I've been thinking about this concept lately. It's a problem that you can never really solve for. And I think there are similarities with addiction. You know, it's really a problem that you can't solve for. And the only sort of remedy that I've noticed is sort of surrendering to the fact that I can't use or drink normally. And it's similar with golf in the sense that I'm trying to solve for keeping the club face square and impact and this and that. And then one day I have this feeling, another day I have that feel. It's just, there's always something to be working on to get better at the craft. And, you know, in order for me to maintain my sobriety, I feel similarly there too, where, you know, I have to do that internal searching so I can maintain my equanimity. So I think that was a meandering way of answering that. But
firstly, congrats on 15 years. That's just a really special and wonderful milestone.
Thank you.
I've got a couple of follow-on questions based on what you just told me. As you started to answer that, you said, I struggle talking about myself. Tell me more about that. Why is that?
Sobriety is very sacred to me. And so my sobriety is mine. And I've never really been one to be public about my sobriety. So it's kind of counterintuitive and contradictory in the sense that I've now started a company around sobriety and golf. But I think there's a world in which both can be true. And for me, I think it's important, and it felt like a mission for me to be able to tell these stories and share my story with people so that they could not feel so alone and that they can know that that there is a different life out there if they're interested in it. And that's mainly one of the things that we're trying to do with SOBA. It's difficult because, you know, I think a lot of times when you're talking about sobriety, it's almost like talking about CrossFit or being vegan. And there's this like negative connotation related to it where like, all right, enough already. Stop telling me about your sobriety or being vegan or whatever. I think this is an important mission. And I think the people that have come on my podcast who have been vulnerable and honest and like yourself about their stories and experience, it allows other people to do the same and allows other people to know that they're not alone and that there are other people out there that can, that you could change the direction of your life if that's what you want. I do find this sobriety journey for me very sacred and it's very personal to me. And again, I think both things could be true. I think I could talk about it publicly, but also keep it personal to me in my quiet conversations with the universe.
Yeah, I think that's a really astute reflection because you and I had a conversation just the other week on the phone and, you know, I've anytime I've spoken to you generally or in particular that last time, I was just reflecting on how since going live with GYH, my son's story has been kind of almost front and center. And actually, I was saying to you that I now have reached a point in time where I've come to reflect that I sort of, for want of a better word, I almost want to adjust the way in which I bring him up and tell his story, because largely through the lens of my own mental health and my state of mind. And I just wonder if what I'm hearing from what you're describing there, which I can also relate to as it relates to my sobriety, is there's a judgment call to be made, isn't there, around like how much detail do I share, which serves me, helps me, but helps others too, you know. And I do agree with you that both things can be true, to use your words. Just the other question I had, just the 15-year milestone coinciding with Mother's Day. Mm. That's really, really nice, you know, and really cool. Was that almost like a happy accident, 15 years? But I mean, if it coincided with Mother's Day, it doesn't coincide with Mother's Day every year, just by chance this year, right?
Just by chance this year, yeah. I think that Mother's Day was coming or had just passed maybe when I was in 2010. So I can't remember exactly, but
you know, I was actually just back up in Scotland the other day with my mum, helping her to make a move down to Wales to be closer to where we are now. And I, nice. You know, she was probably one of the first people to be there for me. That darkness that you described 15 years ago was very much the case for me 6 years ago too. My mum often comments on how much calmer I am these days and the energy that I give off as maybe compared with used to be the case. Like, do you ever get comments like that being like, I'm sure they're proud of you, but that almost pre-sobriety Corey and post-sobriety Corey?
Yeah. I mean, they've expressed a lot of sweetness towards my lifestyle and the decision I've made and the dedication I've had. And, you know, I think in my family, there was always a lot of love and a lot of support. A big part of my story is my dad actually got sober a year before I did. And so I grew up in a household where, you know, alcoholism was a big theme in our house. And there was a lot of unpredictability, a lot of, you know, nervousness and darkness in the household. My mom kind of struggled with mental health. She was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer when she was 40. And we really thought that she wasn't going to make it. So that combined with my dad's drinking, it was a really dark time for the family. I was probably 12 years old. Fortunately, my mom actually is healthy and got through it and is with us today and great. And so it's kind of a miracle in a lot of ways. But, you know, I would say things really started to pick up around 12, 13 years old. It became easier to sort of escape life. You know, when you're having a tough time at home, you know, they talk about the progression of addiction. And, you know, by senior year of high school, 6 years later, you know, I'm doing every drug under the sun. I'm drinking every day and smoking weed every single day. And listen, I think there are people out there who the same life circumstances happening at home, and they don't turn to alcohol and drugs. They turn to positive things like academics or athletics, right? I think that I obviously wasn't coping with life in the most manageable way. Obviously, the reasons that I am of this type, that I identify as an alcoholic and an addict, is because I couldn't stop drinking and using, even when I tried to stop. You know, for years I had tried to moderate and manage my drinking and using, and I just wasn't able to. So, you know, to answer your question, they saw me during all those times. And you know, fast forward, 2010 happens, all my friends are coming home with these 4-year degrees from colleges, and they just see their son home working at this supermarket, not making much of myself. So I think, you know, the early years of sobriety, they held their breath a little bit, but now being a father of 2 girls and a husband, I think they're really proud of me for sure.
I love what you said there about, you know, not being able to stop, because I think to this day I have an issue. I have a struggle calling myself an alcoholic, only because I, you know, without going too deep on it, you know, I kind of see now that I've been this long without taking a drink, and I'm almost like, am I recovered or am I recovering? And I feel it's the latter. I'll always be recovering, always. But I think for me, to be able to be at peace with knowing that if it is that I'm an alcoholic, then to me, what that does mean, I am unable to moderate. I am unable to be responsible in the consumption of drink and drugs. And for that very reason, in my case, that means I can't do it. I can't consume those things because there is no middle ground. There's no gently or one or two, because it just, the empirical evidence proves that I've got too much research in the field that tells me that just doesn't happen in my case. So I appreciate, I think the way you described that there ought to resonate with a lot of people.
And I think that research is important. You know, I think without that research, you can't really dedicate yourself to this lifestyle. You know, so if you're not convinced, you know, try to do it safely. Try to stop drinking for a little bit and see what happens. Nobody could have told me what to do. You know, like, this had to be a very internal experience. You know, and I think that if you decide to make this life choice on your own terms, you'll be on better footing from what I've seen in my experience.
Let's get to Corey the golfer.
Yeah.
So Corey, first, well, had you happened upon golf before the year 2020? Like, had you had any experiences with or dabblings in golf before the year 2020?
Yeah, I mean, I would show up with cargo shorts and like a polo that I'd pull out of like a dusty corner of my closet, you know, and go on and play with friends who were good enough to like keep the ball in the fairway. And I was always athletic. So like, and I was always very competitive. So I've always tried to think that I was better than I was when I played with my buddies, but I never was close to breaking 100. And I probably was closer to like 115 with, you know, real score without mulligans and things like that. I always loved being outside, you know, with friends, but, you know, I'd play once a year, maybe, if that. It was never a focus in my life.
So what happened in 2020 made it all different then?
Yeah. So, you know, obviously COVID happens and we're living in Brooklyn, my wife and I, and things are just getting really weird where we're living. And her parents live in the Lehigh Valley in Pennsylvania, and it's about an hour and a half, 2 hours outside of the city. We're like, you know, let's just go over there for the weekend and see what happens. They actually happened to be down in Florida. So I was like, oh, it's a little weekend away. I only packed for like a day or two. I said, I don't want to stay longer than two nights. You know, fast forward, you look up, we ended up living with them for 6 months. Kind of never expected that, you know, life would turn out that way in 2020. The uniqueness was that they lived on a golf course. So every morning I'd like have my coffee, I'd look out and I saw this beautiful golf course. And my father-in-law is a big golfer, and, you know, he would invite me to play. And I had these, you know, ratty old golf clubs. And we went out and I don't know, little by slowly, there wasn't much else to do. Bit with the bug so quickly. Before I knew it, like I'm buying clubs on eBay and I'm finding myself like at the public driving range literally every single day trying to figure out how to like hit the ball straight and try to break 100. You know, my first goal is to like, let's just try to break 100. You know, that's where the journey started for me, for sure. And that passion, that intensity, that competitiveness has not stopped. You know, like I started, like I said, just trying to break 100, and you know, I've got my handicap down now to about a 4 in these 4 or 5 years. And for me, you know, I want to be a scratch golfer, and there's a lot more that needs to be done in order to do that. It's a you know, it's a steep hill to climb, but I think it's just a really unique and special sport and game in that, like I said, there's endless things that you need to work on and endless things that you continue to learn when you go and play golf.
So many things to unpack here, so many questions for you. First of all, do you still have those ratty old golf clubs?
Yeah, they're in the basement somewhere. They were like my dad's clubs or something, or my grandpa's or something. They're not very good.
Don't get rid of them.
No, you? No. I'll
cherish them forever.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they carry with them some great memories and stories, right?
That's for sure.
What you were saying there about certainly one thing in particular, I want to ask you in this portion of our conversation is about the goal setting, the handicaps, the metrics. Why is that so important to you, Corey? Why are those targets? What do they mean to you? Like going from to 4 to scratch? What does that do for you? What does that mean for you?
You know, I had a girlfriend one time before my wife. We dated for a long time. At the time, I actually have been in bands historically too. So, you know, when I was in high school, I had buddies who played guitar. My best friend across the street played guitar. He came home from college one year and he's fucking shredding it. He's just absolutely shredding the guitar. And I'm like, I could fucking do that. If he could do it, I could do it. And so I pick up the bass guitar and we start a band. And, you know, I just had this competitiveness with myself, honestly, that like I would watch people play, you know, these artists, I'd go to concerts, I'd be like, I feel like I could do that. I go home and I just challenge myself to try to do it. And the point with the girlfriend is like, she had mentioned one time, you know, it always seems like you have something that you're working on, some sort of project, some sort of goal that you're working towards. And my response, and I've always thought about this, I kind of just said, I'll never not have that. And it's just part of my nature. Like, I just love having a project or something that I could work towards or goal that I can kind of accomplish. And the unique thing about golf and the reason I started Soba is that there is no destination with golf. There is no ending point. And that's the same thing with sobriety. That's the same thing for me on this recovery journey of mine, which is there's no destination. There's constant work. There's a daily reprieve that I'm required of me. And it's the same thing with golf. You know, if I want to get better, you know, when I was getting better, I had to go to the course. I had to go to the range. I had to put in the work. And I think when I put in work and I see a desired outcome, there's an excitement for me. And it's interesting because it's fleeting, right? It you get it. And then it's like, I say to myself, what's next? You know, what next can I work on? What's my next goal? You know, so for me, continuing to just challenge myself and push myself to see, get out of myself is that that's what excites me.
You just made me think that whilst I definitely agree with you that there is no final destination in golf, certainly not as it relates to game improvement, let's say, right? You know, because yeah, there's always something that can be worked on there. But actually, there is no final destination in golf generally, but there are mini destinations along the way, if you want there to be. Like, you can tick off courses, you can tick off personal records on a course, or you can, I just guess this is one of the ways in which golf is so unique. Mm. It's such a multifaceted sport, business, environment where, you know, you and I now have both been in our separate ventures around the business side of golf for a little while. And I don't know about you, Corey, but I am constantly inspired by the people that I meet in the golf world who, seemingly on the surface at least anyway, they've been in and around the sport and the business for decades, for pretty much their whole life in some case, but they still love it. Mm-hmm. And like, they're still, they never tire of finding a new project. So there are many destinations on the way, but there ain't no final destination because nobody's found it yet.
Yeah.
You know, do you know what I mean by that?
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, you look at Scottie Scheffler, he's using the claw grip right now, you know, like, and he's winning majors and he won two majors without the claw grip. So it's like, why did he change? You know? And it's like, he saw or found something different or his body's moving differently. And there's just, and he's the greatest golfer in the world right now, you know? So like, it's just, but yeah, you're right. Like, in some ways, you can check off some boxes as you continue on this path. And I think that's something that's really exciting. That's definitely been exciting for me, for sure.
So if you had to try and put into words kind of, you know, because obviously golf yourself healthy, for us when we started, it was very much that expression or that name, that statement was born out of golf is good for you. So how in your experience, you know, what's golf done for you?
Golf is a spiritual experience. I do feel like I've started that trend. I've heard a lot of other people start saying it too, and I'd like to trademark it potentially. But and maybe I didn't. I'm probably being delusional, but it's this endless pursuit of perfection that I'll never reach. There's this experience of like you versus you, right? And you versus Earth, right? When you're battling the course, you know, and I had actually Dr. Joe Perrin on, and he said, whoa, 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 whoa. It's not you versus you or you versus the Earth. What you really want to do is you want to like dance with it. You want to tango with it. It should be in alignment with it, not you versus. And I think there's truth to both in some ways, but there's endless ways in which I see that golf is mystical and spiritual.
I wonder if the competitor in you is the part of you that says, it's me against you, it's me against the course or me against nature kind of thing, which I totally get.
I think the times where I've felt the most aligned or when I've played the best golf is when it's you know, what actually Dr. Joe is saying, which is I'm just aligned with the universe and accepting the shots as they are and getting into my pre-shot routine. So, you know, there's a tenseness versus an openness that happens. And when I'm more open to the universe, I feel definitely better.
Me too. And it's interesting that, you know, it's maybe actually, again, it's not until you have a conversation with someone like Joe Parent, whose work I adore. Really cool that you had him on. Zen Golf, I think, is his book, right? I'm a bit of a mixture of reading books versus audiobooks. And I actually think doing his in the audiobook way is just great because his voice is very soothing, I find, listening to him. But yeah, when you share that example, I think that's where I've played my best golf too, because there's something there about the acceptance of, because if you're trying to fight against nature, nature's going to win more often than not. You know,
So try to fight back.
You just sort of doff your cap, bow down and respect it and say, okay, let's go on this journey together.
Yeah.
Then the chances are it's going to work out.
Yeah.
The equanimity word that you used earlier, there's a higher probability of enjoying equanimity when you're at one with nature. Does not.
How much harder is it said than done? You know, like I'm really going through it with my swing right now. Like I've played my last two rounds horribly. Like I have no feel for the course. I have no feel for my swing. And it's really hard to feel one or have equanimity when you're just not playing well. And it's more than just like, not playing well, it's so far from where I thought I was kind of thing, you know? It's just feeling kind of lost completely.
Do you find it, because you and I also share another thing in common in that we have a mutual friend in Jack McAuliffe, who my listeners will know well because him and I do some episodes together. And what you and him share in common is your standard of golf in terms of handicap, right? You're both single figures, like, you know, in pursuit of scratch, a hell of a lot closer to scratch than I am, that's for damn sure. But I almost wonder in what you were sharing there, is the fact that you know you're that good or that should be your benchmark,
yeah,
is that playing into your mind at all when you're out there having a hard time with yourself, I should be better than this?
It's interesting. After every tee shot, I was telling myself, oh, you're so close, man. You're so close. And it's because I'm going through some swing changes and making, you know, adjustments. And, you know, I really believe that too, that I am close. But like, meanwhile, the ball is in the bushes all the way left, you know, out of play, and I'm hitting three off the tee. You know what I mean? But it's this commitment to the process in the sense that what I'm doing is right in the sense long term and will get me to where I want to go. It's just that setback. And I think that's actually a really cool concept to talk about. And I think something that is a big reason why I've been able to get down from a 30 to a 4 handicap. I think that people don't want to take a couple steps back sometimes. You know, maybe you're a 15 handicap and you want to make that leap into single digits and be a 9. You know, for me, when I was in that position and I wanted to go from 15 to a 9, I had to become almost a 20 again to then go to a nine. You know, there's some steps backwards. You have to be bad again in certain aspects and then relearn that swing on the course. And I think people don't commit long enough to experience that breakthrough change. And for me, what is that? That's becoming humble, right? And again, that has a lot to do with sobriety too, right? Like, in order to get the help that you want, you have to raise your hand and say, hey, I'm struggling here, you know, and go to the first tee, not be very good, know that you might hit it left. You know, I did that the last couple of rounds and I was out of play. I was, you know, I lost actually in this competitive match that I was playing that, you know, now I'm out of this tournament for the whole year, you know, but longer term, and it's interesting. Last night I was at the simulator until 11:30 at night. I had fucking blisters on my hands because I'm like, I'm going to figure this out. And I, all of a sudden with driver, I started to see spin rates I've never seen before. Like in the, usually I'm spinning the ball way too much at like 3,600, 3,800 sometimes, which is like horrible, you know, horrible. I started seeing things under 2,000, you know, and I'm like, wait a second. If I do this and I do that, that's what's happening here. Let's work with this a little bit. So like, maybe I'm just crazy and obsessional too, that like, I just can't settle unless I kind of solve these things. But there's this intensity in me that gets me up and gets me excited and gets me.
I'm shaking my head here. Like, no, you're not delusional, but maybe like the two delusional guys are like, I'm like, no, that's definitely not delusional. It's like, let's be delusional together in this thing here, Corey. But
it's how religion starts, honestly.
I absolutely love what you just said, because for me, what the example you just gave is an example of what it means to golf yourself healthy, for example. And also what you were saying, let's get to sober in just a second, but like, that is where there's a parallel in a crossover between golf and sobriety, working on yourself. Mm. Because actually, in the golf analogy that you used, you've got to be willing to really lift the lid on some unpleasant stuff. Mm. I've written down my pad of paper here, go backwards to go forwards. Mm. So I really love what you shared there. Sober golf is, well, it launched 1st of Jan this year, right? Officially.
Yeah, officially.
I would like to say congrats for everything you've achieved with it so far. I mean, I said to you on the phone the other day, I just look at what you're doing generally, everything that it stands for, but the growth that is experienced already in a relatively short space of time. It's an exciting time for you, but equally, I'm sure you've learned to talk about self-discovery. Mm-hmm. I'll bet in its own way, you've learned a lot on the journey with SOBA. So how would you like to frame it for the listener? What do we need to know about SOBA? What is it? Who's it for, et cetera?
Yeah. SOBA Golf is a golf community that's focused on the intersection between sobriety and golf. And there are a couple aspects to how we think we can deliver and be supportive to this particular community. The biggest focus is that we're going to be creating these golf wellness retreats. So really pairing golf with some techniques and foundational things that we think could be really helpful for anybody, but definitely for people who are on this wellness and sobriety journey. So on these retreats, you'll be able to work on things like breath work, meditation. We'll have yoga in the morning. We'll also have a clinician on staff who will lead meetings, whether they're shared by the community member or by someone that we bring in for relatability. That's going to be a big portion of what we're doing. We also host a digital community. So that's hosted on Discord. Right now we have almost 500 people all across the world The value there is that you can find people in your local area to play golf with. You can also get support from one another. So we have different channels like an accountability channel or a vulnerability channel. And an example of what a conversation can sound like is, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, we had a member who is about 9 months sober. They were going to a work event where they knew that there would be a lot of drinking, and they were a little nervous, you know, to be in that environment. And they wrote this really nice heartfelt note to the group and shared their vulnerability. Excuse me. And the outpouring of love and support for this person was just so special and really unique. And so that's a really unique thing. And we also host meetings every Thursday night where a community member will share their experience, strength, and hope. And we'll have, you know, the rest of the people in the meeting share their you know, relatability. And so we're really just trying to create this movement between people who love golf and are on this sobriety path. And you and I had that instinct to go into that sober golfer society. And you know, they were close. They were onto something. You know, the idea is there. And I don't think the idea of bringing together people who are sober and love golf is that unique. I think the difference is that we're really trying to do this in this really fresh and new way. We're trying to bring on people who are credible voices in the space who can lend credibility to sobriety and golf and share their story bring hope to people who are struggling. Yeah. So if you go to our website, soba.golf, www.soba.golf, you can find everything there. You know, you can join Discord from there. You can find our social links. You know, that's a great place to start for sure.
Fantastic. Thinking back to when the concept for Soba was in a very nascent stage. And again, going right back to when you and I very first started talking.
When was that? When do you think that was?
When you and I first had a first connection, a first chat? Oh, great question.
Mid-2024?
Yeah, I reckon.
Yeah,
it would have been around about there, right? So I just wonder the kind of then and now, like what's... I'm just wondering about now that you've got 5 or so months of activity and followership, community engagement under your belt, et cetera, and seeing how it's impacting people. Mm. Where have you been validated in the things that you assumed would happen in relation to the takeoff of the brand versus things that might have pleasantly or unpleasantly surprise you, you know, because again, as an entrepreneur, it's, I think you said something earlier about it can be a bit of a lonely place sometimes, right?
So, yeah, I think you know this about me, I've had a lot of conviction about Soba from the beginning. I think it's definitely needed. It's definitely the fuel to keep things going because it is a pretty lonely journey. Everything lives in my mind's eye of what Soba is and will be. And when I started this journey in late 2023, you know, we're talking a year and a half ago, the seedling of this idea started. And in 2024, I pretty much spent all of that year dedicating, you know, working full time, having my first baby with my wife and, you know, night owling Soba. And bringing it to life. And my thought was I wanted to look just as pretty as all these other golf companies like the Golfers Journal, Random Golf Club, No Laying Up. I wanted to have the same quality and I wanted to tell these stories in this new and unique way. And I felt like if I could do those things, the right people will come and that people will accept an invitation to my podcast. And, I have to tell you, everything that I said would happen has happened. And I have this note on my computer right here. And It says, when you're on your life's mission, the universe will conspire to help you. And that's a quote from The Alchemist. And I kind of remember reading it a long time ago. And I was listening to a podcast today with the founder of Athletic Brewing. He was talking about it, and he shared that quote. And I remembered how important that was to me when I read it, and how important it feels to me now, which is that I do feel like I'm on my life's mission, and I do feel like the universe is conspiring to help me. And just like with my golf game, and just like with everything else I was telling you about, I'm not stopping. You know, like, this is just the beginning of what I think SOBA will be, and what I know SOBA will be, and how we're going to make an impact. And I don't, in some ways, I feel confident about some of the specifics, and others, I think life will take me in different ways than I never could have imagined. But the main goal and mission is to change the culture's perception on what sobriety can be through the lens of golf. That is the simple mission. And I think we're going to do that in a lot of different ways, through storytelling, through community building. And it's still very hard, you know, like I say all that and I feel conviction, but at the same time, you know, like, I left my job. I have no income right now. I'm not making any money off of SOBA. I'm actually losing a lot of money each quarter. You know, hopefully we'll look at this tape a couple of years from now, and I could laugh a little bit. But today I feel confident. Not every day I do, but in general, there's this conviction that I have and excitement.
I want to remind you of something that you said to me, going right back to, I think, either our very first conversation or one of our very first conversations, which is, we need to do this. The world needs us. We're leaders in our space. If not us, then who, essentially? I admire and respect a lot of qualities in you, Corey, in terms of, because I know, believe me, I kind of know what it's, I love the quote. Can you read out what was on your piece of paper again?
When you're on your life's mission, the universe conspires to help you.
I believe that to be true, but I also know what it's like to have a calling, to be in touch with your purpose in life. And you have it. You know, you've got it right there, and it's always in view. And maybe sometimes gets a little bit distorted because of whatever, you know, sort of challenges or financial or otherwise that you run into. But keep that conviction, you know, keep going. And like you say, I really do sincerely hope that a couple of years, couple of months, who knows? Let's err on the optimistic stroke delusional again, where we kind of go, yes, it was all worthwhile. And because whatever this goes, even if you stop doing it tomorrow, even if you and I both stopped what we were doing tomorrow, well, we'd definitely be able to look back and go, we've made a difference.
Yeah. And just, I'm thinking about the word delusional, right? Like, I think sometimes it has this negative connotation, but like, if you talk to any professional athlete, how many of them would tell you that someone in their life at some point said, what are you kidding me? You'll never be a golfer, or you'll never be a football player. You'll never be a baseball player in the MLB. What are you kidding yourself? That's crazy to think about. That's delusional. And in order to get to where you want to go, you have to think big, I think, and you have to be delusional. And I don't think it's necessarily a negative word, you know. The baby's calling you.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I've just had the dreaded...
That's the alarm
studio,
clock.
The studio door has just been opened. I've had a bit of a dagger's a hook from my wife.
The hug's coming.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah. What is it Wayne Gretzky said? You miss 100% of the shots you never took.
Yeah.
So, yeah, awesome. So there we go.
I think that it might have been Michael Scott from the
Was
Office. Yeah.
If it was him, that's even better.
Yeah.
I could have. Well, I hope it. Well, I'm gonna go check that out now. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, Corey. Corey, thanks so much, my friend. God bless to you, and let's do this again sometime.
Yeah, I'm really appreciative of you, and I love what you're doing. I've always been a huge fan. I think you're a beautiful writer and a great host, and you're on the path too, and I'm excited for both of us. So thanks for having me.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you like what you've heard today and want to hear more content like this, then please head over to golfyourselfhealthy.com and subscribe now. Until our next episode, always remember to embrace the rough and forever cherish the fairway.